Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. When we originally proposed this this session, we were under the understanding that we would be having a interstate meeting prior to this time. And so perhaps it's a little bit grand to say across the United States is the title of this session, but we hope that what we're doing in North Carolina is being picked up. We know it's being picked up in certain parts, and we hope to see it extend still further. As the first speaker, I am looking for the mouse. No mouse.
Is that on the lectern?
Oh, yes. Sorry. It's my pleasure to set the stage for this quiet breastfeeding revolution. The reason we're saying this is because it's a very small institute, and we just continue to do what we can. And in the no conflicts of interest, we are primarily funded by an anonymous donor and other anonymous donors. And I really want to acknowledge all my colleagues, the staff, students, and affiliated faculty of CGBI, who have started this quiet revolution with very little resources. What I'd like to do is present to you our approach, and I'll just be describing the 10 steps so that none of the next speakers will have to do that, and discuss one of our, I just figured out, at least 20 studies that we've been involved in over the last 5 years. Carolina Global Breastfeeding Institute is just 5 years old. And as was mentioned, our location. We also are part of a WHO collaborating center on reproductive health. And indeed, we are concentrating on the three B's, not just breastfeeding, the three B's of breastfeeding, birth spacing, and birthing practice, because we see breastfeeding as part of the reproductive health continuum, not just nutrition, not just immunization, not just growth and development, but a real part of the reproductive health continuum. And we've carried out a variety of applied and translational research. Certainly, graduate education is the raison d'etre of any institute in a graduate school. And before we go on, I just wanted to mention our logo, which is the golden bow, and how this relates to our mission. How many of you are familiar with the golden bow symbol? About half. The golden bow has been around as a symbol of optimal breastfeeding for 15, 20 years or more. While I was at UNICEF, we decided to make it into an international symbol, and we gave it each part of it a name. Each of the loops, one is for the mother and one is for the baby. And as you can see, the bow is, you can flip it, neither one is more important. It's a mother-baby thing. I get very tired of arguments about who breastfeeds, the mother or the baby. The answer is yes. And when we study breastfeeding, hopefully we look at the yes, at the mother and the baby. The knot in the middle is for father, family, and society, without whose support breastfeeding simply would not succeed. One of the, come on, somebody help me, the things off of the bow. Tails, one of the tails, good. One of the tails stands for continued breastfeeding beyond the 6 months, beyond the exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months, up to 2 years and beyond, with age-appropriate complementary feeding. Because we know for breastfeeding to succeed, the complementary feeding has to succeed and to continue to support each other until the child is on family food. The other streamer is for 3 to 5 years birth spacing, so that this baby can be the baby as long as it needs to be, so that breastfeeding can continue readily without tandem breastfeeding for at least 2 years or so, and so that the mother can recover from this pregnancy before she goes on to the next. I can't talk about breastfeeding without showing this slide. Truly, it's the first one I ever animated, so I'm very proud of it. But what we just wanted to say is breastfeeding is nature's own oral rehydration, and I could talk at length about either of these. Breastfeeding contributes directly and indirectly to growth and development, especially now that we know that human milk in the gut causes messenger RNA to behave differently, and that we know that there's an epigenetic difference between the breastfed and the otherwise fed infant. Certainly, nature's own immunization, preventing diarrhea, pneumonia, ear infection, reduces cancer and chronic disease in the child. We don't often think of it, but the direct impact on maternal health immediately postpartum, as well as later chronic diseases such as diabetes and cancer, are reduced by breastfeeding. Breastfeeding contributes to birth spacing and fertility reduction. In fact, globally, breastfeeding has more impact on birth spacing than all contraceptive use combined. family health? Well, certainly breastfeeding is an economic win-win situation for the family, and there's many other ways that this, the fact that this baby doesn't have to worry about the older siblings coming home from school with infectious diseases, really helps the whole sense of family well-being. And oh, by the way, breastfeeding is nutrition. Worldwide, the data from Lancet have clearly indicated the importance of exclusive breastfeeding, that 13% of preventable child mortality, child deaths, could be prevented by exclusive breastfeeding and continued breastfeeding for the first year. Another 6% could be prevented by the continued breastfeeding into 2 years and beyond with age-appropriate complementary feeding. And newborn temperature control would prevent another 2%. And you can add with me, 13 plus 6 plus 2 is about 1 out of 5 of the current deaths that occur could be prevented just by optimal breastfeeding practices. Some of these feed into the 10 steps. Globally, where is the money spent on preventing child deaths? Here. Somehow there's a disconnect between what we know will prevent child deaths and where the resources go. So write to your congressman. Our mission is to create an enabling environment at community, national, global levels in which every mother is supported to choose and to succeed. We really go at this issue from helping women achieve their intention to breastfeed and perhaps go beyond their original intention, and that every child will achieve his or her full potential. And we do this with a comprehensive approach. Since we're in a school of public health, we think socio-ecological framework. We like to ensure that our programs and our thinkings approach the individual, the community, on up to government, and we also use the intergenerational reproductive health frame. In the work that Emily did earlier and that we've done over the years, we really recognize that you can't help breastfeeding by just doing the 10 steps in the hospital. We'll come back to the 10 steps in a minute. Maternal concerns about breastfeeding go back from pre-pregnancy on until several months into their breastfeeding. Obstetric staff only covers part of this time. The pediatric staff kind of comes whamming in at around birth, and not so high there. The support for breastfeeding is something that pediatricians are just learning now. Certainly, the maternity staff is there at the time of birth. We need to have the social support, the workplace, societal pressures that, and yet, this is where we're going to be talking about today, the impact of maternity staff on breastfeeding, the 10 steps. So what are the 10 steps? These are practices that have been considered essential. Essential 10 practices if a hospital wants to support any one of its women, clients, patients who wishes to breastfeed. They were developed in the late 80s. They are the basis for baby-friendly credentialing. The WHO UNICEF Baby Friendly Hospital Initiative stemmed from the Innocenti Declaration of 1990. The declaration called on all governments to institute by 1995 to ensure that every facility providing maternity services fully practices all 10 steps, all 10 of the 10 steps. So in 1990, 30 countries signed on that all of their hospitals would be baby friendly by 1995. We are one of the signatories. Little reality check there. Today in the United States, about 3% of maternities have achieved the baby friendly credentialing, although my guess is many of them or others are well on their way. The reason that I corrected our moderator is that Baby Friendly, or BFHI, is actually a registered trademark. And what we're working on at CGBI is the institution of the 10 steps. So we just want to make it clear that BFHI per se is not our goal. Our goal is to assist the achievement of the 10 practices. And what are those 10 practices? Briefly, the first is that there should be some kind of policy. You have to have something in writing so everybody who comes in knows what you want to do. Secondly, that all the healthcare staff should have the requisite skills to properly support a woman who wishes to breastfeed. The third is to inform all pregnant women, the antenatal aspect, inform all pregnant women about the benefits, managements, and we actually work also on sort of prophylactic training, making sure that women know the good and bad and the ugly that lay ahead so that they are prepared to address the issues that come up with breastfeeding. Help mothers initiate breastfeeding within half an hour is really interpreted differently these days. Our understanding of this really is immediate skin-to-skin and assisting the mother-baby dyad to succeed with breastfeeding within an hour or so of the birth, assuming that it was a normal vaginal birth without too much anesthesia. Step 5, show mothers how to breastfeed and maintain lactation. That means hand expression. We are not trotting out pumps on the first day postpartum. It's contraindicated for breastfeeding success. Rather, that women should understand that they can hand express and maintain lactation even if there is an unexpected separation from their infant. Step 6 also rolls in the code of marketing. This is to give no food or drink other than breast milk unless medically indicated. We also added to that that there should be no free samples in the hospital and that formula should be purchased like any other commodity. We don't let McDonald's give us free food for the cardiac care unit. It doesn't make sense for us to invite formula companies to give free food in the infant area. Practicing rooming in is step 7, and that is to allow mothers and infants to be together 24/7, or as many as days as they are in the hospital, because when they get home, it's going to be 24/7. This also allows the education of the mom on how to be with her child. The concept of whisking the baby away during those first 2 days, when that is the time that the nurse can actually assist a woman to learn how to care for her baby, is really contraindicated for successful mothering and for successful mother-child interaction and for successful breastfeeding. Number 8 is the on-demand factor, which does not mean upon screaming. On-demand means when the infant indicates by cues that it's ready to eat. And it's amazing how many moms there are out there who don't know what their baby's cues are. They've been so taught that this is what you do to the baby rather than allowing that natural interaction with their baby. And that's one of the things that we emphasize. Don't put anything else in the baby's mouth except the breast, at least in the early days, because that is the interaction developing. And finally, foster the establishment of support groups after you leave the hospital. Now, the study that I'm presenting today is a rather simple one. We decided to look at what the association is between the steps as measured by MPINC and breastfeeding rates in different states. And we were curious to see if we could tease out which steps might have the most impact on breastfeeding. So what we did is we used the CDC Maternity Practices Infant Nutrition MPINC survey of hospitals across the U.S. And we used their subscale scores for each of the sets of practices that are reflected in the steps. We took the breastfeeding rates from the CDC NIS data for the same year. And we used SAS to see if there was an association. Basically, I should say there was descriptive analysis and logistic regression to assess this. And what did we find? Of all the steps that we were able to measure, rooming in was significantly associated with breastfeeding rates at the state level. Again, rooming in associated with a state level breastfeeding. That does not mean causation. This is association. All it means is you have a look at the states that are doing well, they have a heck of a lot of rooming in. Now, if you look at what's associated with exclusive breastfeeding at 3 months, two other factors seem to come into it, although they don't achieve individual significance. They are part of the set of variables that come into the F value for impact on exclusive breastfeeding at 3 months. And here, that immediate skin-to-skin and the post-discharge both seem to be in the model for succeeding with exclusive breastfeeding. Again, we can't say causation, but this is intriguing finding. And again, at 6 months, the rooming in remains significant, as does the immediate skin-to-skin and post-discharge come into the model. So what does this tell us? Basically, rooming in is associated with all three of these. Postpartum skin-to-skin and post-discharge support planning seems to be important for achieving exclusive breastfeeding, but there are real limitations. As I said with this study, this is ecological. We were looking at the association between two numbers. What it does is it opens our eyes to a few thoughts, things that have to be looked at more closely. And the recommendation that might come out of this is a statement along the lines of that states that are succeeding on having decent initiation rates and exclusive breastfeeding rates have also high ratings on steps 4, skin to skin, rooming in, and post-discharge planning. Conclusion, I would say very simply, is that there is an association that we see at the state level with rooming in, initiation, continuation, exclusivity, but clearly further exploration is needed to assess whether it's causative, whether it's some kind of just serving as a proxy for something else, and to see if it's rather the other way around, that the rooming in is a result of pre-existing high levels of interest in breastfeeding. Thank you very much.